Star Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC, also by Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank and their Cromwell Savings Bank Division, hometown friends serving your best banking interest in every way. Now your host, Dick Bertel.
And with me once again is radio historian, collector, Ed Corcoran. And I'm looking forward to today's show because we're playing the types of programs that I enjoy the most. Usually from under the bed, I must admit to that. Did you enjoy horror shows?
I know, because horror shows really were the first shows to really catch on in early network radio, because it was a whole new adventure, you know, for listeners, particularly younger listeners. They were very impressed by these various horror shows, maybe more so than the youngsters of today.
I suppose that could be true. I'm wondering if there's a parallel, Ed, between films and radio. Because if you stop to think, Dracula, Frankenstein were all produced 1931, 1932, at the time that radio was really being born and coming into its own.
Exactly. There is a very similar parallel. In fact, they just played those two particular shows you mentioned on a local station within the last few weeks. And I must say, particularly Dracula, that it does show its age, particularly in the lighting. You know, every time you see Dracula's face, he has his eyes kind of lit up a little bit and that sort of thing. And it was great back in 1930, but today I don't know whether people will still accept that. And that's what's happened to our radio material, too, that during this period it was terribly exciting radio, but it's been done over and over again so many times that today audiences maybe wouldn't get the same kick out of it that we did when we heard it for the first time.
Well, of course, the imagination was put to its fullest use in the horror format, and obviously one can think of the squeaking door, which was the sound trademark of Inner Sanctum, as setting a mood. I mean, that would send chills up and down your spine every time it opened, right?
Yes, that's true. And then all of the ghoulish effects, you know, the stabbing into a pumpkin with a knife and that sort of thing for mayhem that was committed. And also the music, I think, was very important. They really came up with some terrific music to set the scene. And invariably, there was always a thunderstorm. It seemed the thunderstorms always seemed to go well with any kind of a horror theme you might want to have. And they did it very well on radio, very believable.
I would seriously consider The Witch's Tale to be the granddaddy of the horror shows. Am I right?
I would say very definitely you are right, Dick, that that kind of set the pace for all the rest. And it was written by a fellow named Alonzo Dean Cole, who lived in Connecticut for a good number of years, and later wrote such shows as Casey, Crime Photographer. So he was very talented.
Well, when I first met you, and that was over 10 years ago now, as far as we knew, The Witch's Tale didn't exist.
There was none in existence anywhere, and what happened is that somebody heard me on one of your shows, and he said that he bought a house occupied by Alonzo Dean Cole, and he had left a lot of these old records up in the attic, and would I be interested? Well, naturally I would be, so I went down and looked them over, and there must have been 40 or 50 transcriptions, all of the early witches' tales going back to the early 30s. And these, to my knowledge, are still the only copies available in the whole country today. I have the only ones, and all on transcriptions. So they're at the absolute best quality you can get.
But you've made them available to other collectors through tape.
Oh, yes. They're widely circulated, but they're all, you might say, reproductions. I have all the originals, so Someday I'll donate them to a museum or something, but right now I'm very happy to have them because they are the rarest thing in my whole collection.
All right, we're going to share with our audience one of those stories right now.
Let us join old Nancy and Satan, her wise black cat.
Dance out them lights, everybody. Nancy's love yarns is best listened to in the darkness. Now draw up to the fire and gaze into them both. Soon you'll see inside a happy home across the seas in France. It's down in the country where them old heathen Romans used to live 2,000 years ago. Gaze into them embers deep and hear our yarn of the Rome's Venus.
Mama, Howie should be here any minute. If you don't hurry, I shall be dressed in time to meet him.
Stop squirming if you want me to finish. Oh, I'll be glad when Henri takes you off my hands. Then I won't have to tie ribbons on a creature who can't stand still a moment.
You won't be glad at all. You'll weep constantly after I married and go to live in Paris.
I shan't shed a single tear. The sooner such a nuisance as you is out of my sight, the better. Oh, my baby, you will be leaving me soon.
Mama, stop that.
My little Georgie.
Stop it or I'll cry too. Mama, please don't.
No, I mustn't. Anyone who saw me would think a funeral was to take place here in 5 days instead of a wedding. And I'm really very happy. Your Henri is a good man. He loves you and you love him.
Oh, so much, Mama. So much.
Stop your sighing and let me finish with these ribbons. Oh, I suppose I sighed the same foolish way before I married your father. And that's the only thing I have against Henri. He's so much like your father.
Why, Mom?
In his ridiculous interest, I mean. How the daughter of an antiquary can ever wish to become the wife of one is quite beyond my comprehension.
Oh, you really don't mean that. With all these constant delving among old ruins and buried cities, Papa has remained as close and dear to you as Henri will be to me.
Yes, of course, physically. But I long ago discovered that to a man with the archaeological bee in his bonnet, no mere woman can compete spiritually with a 1,000-year-old trifle that he's dug up from the earth.
Whoa, Sarah!
Oh, Mama, that's old Jacques outside. The carriage has returned with Henri.
Georgia!
Georgia! Dear Mama,
be dear.
I'm coming, Henri. Hurry, Mama.
I'm right behind you.
Henri.
Georgia, darling. Oh, my little sweetheart.
Good afternoon, Henri. Welcome back.
Madame de Marsay, I salute you.
Don't waste your kisses on an old woman such as I, but tell this girl of mine how much you've missed her.
Oh, I already know, Mama, for I know how greatly I've missed him.
Hélène! Georgette!
Oh, here comes your father, Georgette, covered with dirt from head to foot.
Henri, you have arrived!
Just now, Monsieur de Marsay.
And no thanks to you, Francois. You should be ashamed you didn't meet him at the station.
Oh, I have been doing something more important. Something that will make Henri's eyes grow wide with envy.
You've unearthed the statue, Papa? Oh,
the men are bringing it. Just wait until you see it.
Statue? What statue?
Didn't Georgette tell you of my find?
Henri just stepped from the carriage. Besides, I don't yet know what you found. I left before...
Wait until you see. Hurry, hurry, you men.
It looks as though they were bearing a corpse.
Now, handle it carefully there. Now, place it upright there.
Monsieur de Marsay. Why, it's an antique bronze.
Yes, a life-size bronze of Venus. A Venus of the ancients.
Where did you find her? How did you...
Look at her, my boy. Oh. And envy me my luck. This statue may prove the greatest find of the century.
She's gorgeous.
Superb.
A masterpiece.
Monsieur Dove.
She's the loveliest thing I've ever seen.
That's a fine thing for a prospective husband to say in the presence of his future wife.
Well, I hardly think Georgette will be jealous of all his compliments to a statue.
What was that sound?
Oh, candle inside my Venus. Some loose fragment of the hollow form must have fallen and struck against the metal sides.
Dear, see what I brought you from Paris.
That ring upon your little finger?
Uh-huh.
Oh, how gorgeous. Let me put it on.
No, not yet. It will only leave my finger for that of my wife's. It won't be yours for 4 whole days.
It's to be my wedding ring.
Yes. There's a Latin inscription inside that means yours forever.
You shall be mine, and I will be yours forever.
Goddess has certainly struck terror into the peasants around here.
Well, they won't come within 100 meters of her now, even though Jean-Carl is far from dead as he claimed to be when he came to. Oh, dear. That is strange, the way that accident occurred. I must consult an oculist about my eyes. I could have sworn the statue's arm lashed out in blind rage and struck him.
Georgette still maintains the reason for that rage was something I said about your beautiful bronze lady. Oh, it's all too ridiculous.
Of course it is. We're progressing splendidly. The upper part of my Venus is quite clean now.
She's a gorgeous thing, your Venus.
You admire her as I do. This divinity dug from the earth.
Yes. It's easy to understand why men of long ago adored her.
You and I are pagans at heart. We could adore her now.
Yes. We could adore her now.
Confound it.
What's the matter?
You know, this ring. It's so thick and heavy, I can't hold the scraper properly.
That's the wedding ring you're to give Georgette on Friday, Venus Day.
Yes. I can't work any longer with this ring on. It's cutting into my flesh.
Take it off.
Where shall I put it?
What's the matter with your pocket?
Well, there's a hole in each of them. I'm still a bachelor, you know. I see the perfect place. The statue's outstretched finger.
Perfect. And another good omen, Ori. Your wedding ring will be blessed by the goddess of love herself.
Now, with it there out of the way, I can certainly use my hand more freely.
But beware, Henri. With that ring on her finger, Venus may think you've married her.
Fortunately, the thoughts of a bronze lady are very unimportant.
Henri!
Well, Georgette is coming to join us.
Darling, I thought you said you wouldn't come near our goddess again.
I don't want to. But I'm not going to let her take you and Papa away from me altogether.
Sweetheart, as though anything could take me away from you for long.
Don't. Please don't say anything nice to me when she's so close.
Georgette.
I know, I'm foolish. It must have been coincidence that Jean-Col was hurt by her when you said you cared more for me, but I'm afraid of her somehow.
But that's so utterly ridiculous.
Molly, look.
What?
An inscription.
No.
My scraper just uncovered.
Oh, let's see. Where?
Here, here. Now we shall learn something of my Venus's history.
It's badly worn, very faint.
You can make it out with your young eyes.
I think I can. Yes. It reads, Cave Amantum.
Cave Amantum. That can be translated, beware of him who loves you.
No, wait. The more likely translation is, look out for herself, yourself, if she loves you.
You're right. That's it.
It's no more.
Not another word.
Look out for yourself if she loves you.
Well, that doesn't tell us very much.
Oh, yes, it does. Hurry, come away. Don't stay near her any longer.
Oh, Georgette.
Oh, please, please, keep away from her. She's more than metal. She looks almost alive. And she's bad, cruel. Oh,
darling.
My child.
My ring. My wedding ring is on her finger.
Oh, well, it impeded my work. I
put it. You said it would only leave your finger for that of your wife's, and she has it.
She's only a statue.
She's more than that. She's the symbol of a goddess. People built temples to her. She was worshipped, honored, feared. Her worshippers are dead, but maybe thoughts don't die. Perhaps the shadow of their faith still lives. Perhaps the power it gave her lives.
My child, such talk is madness.
I don't care if it is. Hurry. Don't let her have my wedding ring.
Well, I'll get it at once, dear, since you wish it.
How quick. Hurry. What's the matter?
Well, it's stuck. It won't come off.
Oh, pull hard.
I am. Something has changed here.
Changed?
Yes. When I slipped the ring on, this finger was straight.
Venus has closed her hand.
She won't give back your wedding ring.
Join your right hands and repeat after me. I, Henri Michel de Saint Clair, take thee, Georgette Cécile de Marseille, for my lawful wife.
I, Henri Michel de Saint Clair, take thee, Georgette Cécile de Marseille, for my lawful wife.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer.
For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer.
In sickness and in health, until death do us part.
In sickness and in health, until...
Henry!
Until death! 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 No! Venus, I am yours forever!
Henry!
Venus, your bridegroom is coming to you!
Stop him! Henry, come back!
We ran out of that storm!
He's going to that statue!
No!
That statue is moving!
His arms reach out to clasp him!
Your bridegroom, Venus, has come for his embrace!
He's in her metal arms!
She's crushing him to death!
We're discussing horror shows tonight. We're going back into the fabulous collection of Ed Corcoran, and we'll return to our subject right after this message.
If your car has just about been making it through the winter, then drive into spring with a new car. Dealers are offering some great buys right now on remaining 1976 models as well as new, more economical 77s. Visit one of the offices of Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank or their Cromwell Savings Bank division and ask them to help map out one of their convenient auto loans for you. They'll help you purchase that new car quickly and easily, and you'll get low-cost bank interest rates too. At both Farmers and Mechanics and Cromwell Savings, you can count on friendly and accommodating service. So check into an automobile loan soon and drive into spring with that new car. You'll find a friendly loan officer at any of their six offices. Cromwell Savings has two, one at the corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell, or the new Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has four offices to serve you, two in Middletown and branches in Montville and Colchester. Stop in soon. Members FDIC. Now back to Dick Bertel.
Ed Corcoran and I are sharing this microphone together as we talk about horror shows during the golden age of radio. Oh, and we had so many. We heard an excerpt from The Witch's Tale, which we consider to be the forerunner of all of the mystery shows on the air. But there was another one which was developed much later and ran into the 40s, well into the 40s. That was a show called Quiet, Please. Now, who was responsible for this series?
Well, it was written and directed by a man named Willis Cooper, who I believe was out of Chicago. And he collaborated on many of these scripts, I believe, for the other shows, particularly Lights Out. But eventually he got his own show, and he chose Ernest Chappell, who was an announcer, to do the lead. And if you look back over radio, Dick, you'll find very few announcers ever play dramatic parts. Kenny Delmar was one, and maybe Harry Von Zell. But after that, very few. They either announced or they didn't. But this man did this one show and played the lead all the time as, you know, the male lead. And I would say this is an updated version of The Witch's Tale. It was a more modern storyline, but very, very surprised endings, you know. They always come up with something very unusual in the presentation, so It was a great series.
Did Chappell act as narrator as well as the lead actor?
Yeah, he would do both. During the course of a show, he would do the background narration and also play the leading role. Or once in a while, he'd do the without the narration. You know, many shows didn't require it. Once the intro was given, the show went on its own. But he did both here, mostly talking in the first person.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd segue, as we call it in the trade, into the actual part of the dramatic story itself.
Well, you know, when you mention the narration, this was a form that radio began to develop in the 40s, and it was a very effective one. The story usually had already taken place, and the narrator was recounting
right.
the adventure, the circumstance, and it worked very well because you avoided the obvious need for an announcer to set the scene.
Mm-hmm. As I say, he talks along about a certain situation, and you dissolve into that scene, and the other actors would take place, and then it would go back to him again. So you carried on a storytelling as well as a dramatic presentation, all into one type of thing.
All right. Which story are you going to share with us?
Well, this is my favorite of all these. It's called The Thing on the Floorboard Board, and the premise is that when you dig for oil, you never know what's going to come out of the ground besides oil, and they make quite a thing out of it in this particular show, Dick.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called The Thing on the Floorboard Board. Me, I'm a roughneck. Well, I was a roughneck, 20 years ago. A little too old, too slow now. Besides, I got a dollar now. I don't have to be a roughneck, you see. Married, got a nice home. Have to meet my wife. Hey, Mike! Her name's Maxine, but she likes to be called Mike. Mike! Yeah, I guess she's busy out in the kitchen someplace. Besides, she doesn't hear very well. Shame, too. She's so pretty and everything. Well, you'll meet her. Sit down. I was saying I was a roughneck. Well, no, that doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. A roughneck is an oil field worker, specifically a guy in a drilling crew. Call them roughnecks like you call a section hand on the railroad a gandy dancer, a garage hand a grease monkey. Same time you work around a drilling crew for a while, you're going to be a roughneck in every sense of the word, boy. A derrick floor or a forble board's no place for a guy with a bow tie. Because when you have to fool around with drilling holes that go farther down the ground than it is from the top of Pike's Peak down to sea level, sure they do. By the time I was a roughneck, we'd got this one well down to 7,313 feet. That was a record. But last May, Pure Oil brought one in out in the Trona Valley in Wyoming at 14,309 feet. That, friend, is almost 3 miles. Quite a hole, that, huh? Sure, I don't think there's an oil man in the world that don't wonder one time or another what's down there, besides rock and oil and gas. We found something once, me and Billy Grunewald, and something found us. I'll tell you about it. We were down to around 5,400 feet. We'd set casing. We began to get water, so we had to stop drilling and cement off. Well, you see, when water begins to seep in the hole, you pull your drill pipe, then you let down a cementing shoe inside the casing, and you plug up the bottom of the hole, casing and all, with quick-hardening, waterproof cement. Then when it's hard, you drill through the cement and go on down, and the cement outside the casing at the bottom keeps the water out. Well, we had the drill pipe all pulled and cracked, and the cement was setting, see? So we was shut down, waiting for it to harden. We'd been coring just before. You see, a core drill is hollow, and as the bit digs down, it stops the drillings up inside it, so when you pull it out, you got a sample of the kind of stuff you're going through. And a geologist can tell a lot from that. So there's nobody around the rig except me that night. The rest of the crew's gone into town. I was toasting some pork chops over the porch for myself, so I heard a car pulling up. Look out, it's Billy Grunewald, the geologist, and I give him a hello.
Hi, Billy. Come and have a pork chop.
Hi, Porky. Where's everybody?
Yeah, all went to town. I'm the whole crew.
Yeah, I had 3 blowouts between here and Oxnard.
Yeah, I wondered where you was. Ted said you'd be in here about 3.
Yeah, I would have been, except for my tough luck. Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, hungry?
Starved.
Yeah, I got 7 pork chops. And bread. And some coffee, kind of.
Swell. Yeah, I got a bottle in the car.
We gonna have a banquet.
Hey, where's that core? That's what I came up here to look at.
Yeah, back there on the bench. Look at it after supper. You turn the blower on and get the coffee hot.
Okay.
Put another handful of coal on again.
Yeah. Hey, turn on the lights, will you, Porky?
Okay.
Oh, that's better. I don't like to eat in the dark. Hey.
What?
Didn't you say you were all alone here? I thought I heard somebody talking.
Yeah. I don't see anybody.
Sounded like up there on the forward board.
Oh, that. Yeah, that's some of them doggone screech owls. I tell you, they set you nuts out here. You drive along the road, they sit there till you get right on top of them, and then they go, boo!
Oh, stop it.
Fly up in front of you like a ghost. I remember one time coming up this road right
yeah,
out here.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was, all right. Oh, they give me the jibber. Hey, listen, Porky. Go out to the car and look in the left-hand door pocket and bring back that bottle, will you? That's what I need.
Okay, kid. Okay.
So I picked up a flashlight. I turned around and went outside. I found the car. And I got the bottle.
Yay!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Billy?
Hey, come here. Look here.
Well, what's it?
Look, Porky.
Where did you find that?
Now, listen, Porky, I give you my word. That was embedded in the core.
Why, it couldn't be.
I tell you, it was. Look where I dug it out. You know what? That rock there comes from a mile underground. And it's been a mile underground for 1,000,000 years. And look at this.
And I did look. And what he was holding was a gold ring. And it was all carved and filigreed just like jewelry. And there wasn't any kidding about it. It was real.
Oh, that's quite a story. Quiet, Please, with Ernest Chappell, written and produced by Willis Cooper.
Incidentally, Dick, that was done on Sunday, just right before The Shadows, so you had a double-barrel horror series there when this was on the air.
I thought that Quiet, Please was on very late at night, but evidently they weren't concerned about that.
No, it was Sunday afternoon. I think it ran for 2 seasons, and I was very sorry it went off the air because I enjoyed it. And this was the one show I always wanted. It took me 5 or 6 years to find this particular story we did today.
Where do these stories come from? Very often, we're asked that. You know, if these programs were done live as they were, how do you come across recordings of them?
Well, there are several ways. The most prodigious method, or the most ample way of doing it, that's the correct terminology, was for the armed forces. That during the years preceding World War II and many years after World War II, every commercial program of any merit at all was copied onto a disc, transcription or otherwise, sometimes the LP-sized disc, and sent all over the world to the various armed forces radio services. Most of them were destroyed, but many of them were saved, and that provides the bulk of these vintage shows. The others, they made copies for the sponsor many times as a proof of that the show was on the air, and it ran for the time they specified. And many times, though, they made these very inexpensively. They just, you know, they were made as almost a reject type copy. They didn't care about the fidelity, or they didn't care. They just wanted to have some kind of a record of it. So some of the shows, as a result, from this group, aren't up to par, but they're still listenable. And then there were still a few people who were artists who wanted copies, you know, for their own for their archives. And as in the case of Lonzo Dean Cole, he saved all his transcriptions, although I only got a small part of them. At least that's where they came from.
I remember when we interviewed Mason Adams here on the program, he had tucked away in his attic a couple of shows that prior to that had never been in circulation because he was on them and had a private recording company record them off the air.
Yeah, they used to do it with 12-inch 78s, which ran about 4 minutes a side. So a half-hour show would take about four discs on both sides. And many times they'd break off in the middle of a sentence because when you get to that inner track, you know, right near the label there, it automatically cut off and went on to the next. Kind of like what they do in motion pictures when they switch from one camera to, or one projector to another. You can't really tell. And they did the same thing there. So sometimes you were cut off in the middle of a sentence and went on to the next. But by careful cueing, you could get them all looking back together again when you put it on tape.
Let's climb aboard the train and join the mysterious traveler. What was the concept of this show?
Well, it was an anthology series, which simply means that each week they told a different story. The only thing that was the same was the introduction and the narrator. And the introduction was very nice because it was a steam locomotive, which I think we all miss. There was nothing like a steam locomotive for nostalgia, you know, if you were...
Or for sound effects,
yeah,
for that matter.
Yeah, it was really like a living thing out there. And unfortunately, like yourself, Dick, having grown up in New York, I didn't see very many of them in my youth. But when I was on vacation, I used to spend hours just watching those odd things go by when I was in my vacation spot because they were so unique. Well, anyway, that's the introduction to the show. And then the concept is that as you're on this train, this man will tell you a little story, and then just as you get to the end, you have to get off. And that's where it ends. So, and that was certainly one of the most popular shows of its type ever done on the air.
Well, what is the theme of this particular Mysterious Traveler?
This one has to do with a man, I believe, who has psychic powers. And what happens when he starts to use them.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring three of radio's foremost actors, Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Jenny, in Fire in the Sky.
Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two young people who find themselves in the strangest situation human beings ever encountered. It's the story I call Fire in the Sky. It's late evening, and a convertible with the top down is driving along a lonely road in the Shenandoah Valley. The driver is young, in his 20s. So is the girl beside him.
They're Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Ramsey of New York City, married less than 24 hours and honeymooning. Lick Ramsey is driving slowly, for both he and Sally are watching the great golden disk which is rising in the sky above the hills to the west. Not the moon, but the new comet which the whole world is talking about with excited interest and some apprehension.
Nick, it's so bright. It's grown much brighter since last night.
Yes, I know. Seems to be about half as big as the moon now. You can almost see it grow.
Looks as if it were coming right at us.
Well, that's just an illusion. It'll pass about 15 million miles away, the radio said.
15 million? That sounds like a lot. But I wish it were more.
Oh, they said it wouldn't do much damage even if it hit us head on. Comets are mostly gas, you know.
Well, it certainly looks solid. Nick, look up ahead. Somebody's signaling us with a flashlight.
Yeah, it was like an old codger, one of the local natives, I guess.
Well, do you think we ought to stop? Such a lonely road.
Oh, he probably just wants a lift. Anyway, he's so old he couldn't hurt us any. Hello, you want a lift?
Oh, evening, folks. Mighty glad you come along. I need some help bad.
Help?
It's my partner. Rock slide fell on him, crushed his chest in. He's down in the mine. I need help to get him out.
You're a miner?
That's right, ma'am. Name's Jones. Jerry Jones. We got us a mine up this road about a quarter of a mile. Poor Sam hurt himself an hour ago. Been waiting ever since for somebody to come along.
Well, Sally, I guess it's up to us. We can't leave some poor fellow dying and not help.
But, Nick, are you sure?
I'm sure it's all right. Okay, hop in, Mr. Jones. We'll have your partner out just as quick as we can.
Believe me, I'll shoot if you try to get away.
Nick, a gun.
Now, listen, put away that revolver. I don't know what kind of crazy scheme this is,
but... It's not crazy. I'm trying to save your lives.
Save our lives?
You see that comet in the sky?
Yes.
They're calling it Comet X. They should be calling it Doomsday.
You are crazy.
That's enough talk. In 14 hours, this Earth and that comet are going to meet, and time is precious. Get on that lift, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, or I'll shoot. Believe me, no harm will come to you if you do just as I say.
I guess we'd better do it, Sally. There's no use in arguing with a madman who has a gun.
Well, if you say so, Nick.
Now, that's better. Now, hold on tightly. Don't do anything foolish. If you don't know how to operate this lift, then we have a 1,000-foot drop below us.
Everybody off the train. That was The Mysterious Traveler. We're doing horror stories from the golden age of radio, and my guest, Ed Corcoran, will be back right after this.
Spring is officially less than a month away. If 1977 is the year that you plan some improvements to your home or property, stop in soon and chat with the folks at Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank or their Cromwell Savings Bank division. Perhaps that much-needed family room is tops on your priority list. Maybe it's a dormer in the enlarging of those upstairs bedrooms you've been contemplating, or a new patio or driveway. Whatever the reason, get complete information on a home improvement loan now. You'll find Cromwell Savings Bank located at the corner of Main and West Streets and the Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart in Cromwell with convenient Saturday hours 9 to noon. And Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has 4 offices to serve you, 2 in Middletown and branches in Montville and Colchester. With the exception of the Middletown office on Main Street, they're also open Saturdays from 9 to noon. Visit them soon. Let them show you how a home improvement loan can help you. Members FDIC and Equal Housing Lenders. Here again is Dick Bertel.
We're delving into the collection of Ed Corcoran tonight. We're really concentrating on the programs themselves. Very often we have not been able to do that when we've had guests on the show, or we've had to work around the guests to provide material on which they appeared. But we're really enjoying ourselves because both of us enjoy horror programs, and there were so many great ones on the air. And I'd like to, you know, really the show that we're going to do next, Ed, is not in that category in the true sense of the word. The program I'm talking about is I Love a Mystery, but it bordered on it.
Very, very close. It was fantasy rather than horror, in which these people got into situations that were virtually unbelievable all over the world, and among radio buffs, it's probably the most popular show that was ever done. There's no other show to compare with it when it comes to way out adventure, I guess you would call it.
Okay, let's bring our young audience up to date as to who the people might have been in I Love a Mystery.
Well, it was written by Carlton E. Morse, who also wrote One Man's Family, which ran for some 20-odd years on radio. And he borrowed some of the principles from that show into this. There were three main characters. There was Doc, who was a Texan, and that was Barton Yarborough. And then there was Jack Packard, who was kind of the leader of the group. That was Michael Raffetto. And then there was, I guess, York. What was the first name?
Reggie.
Reggie York, right. And that was a fellow named Patterson. And in the One Man's Family, Paul was played by the same fellow that played Jack, and Clifford was played by the fellow that, that played the Texan. And finally, Reggie was, I guess he was married to one of the daughters, the Claudia. So they all doubled up, but they played the role somewhat differently, particularly Barton Yarborough. He played it pretty straight in One Man's Family, but he played with a very severe Texas accent here. And the whole idea was this Carlton E. Morse had dreamed up some crazy things. Maybe they'd be in a cave someplace in Costa Rica, and they had, bats were coming in to knock them off an edge of a precipice or something like that. Then they'd be in a waterfall, or it could be almost any situation you can imagine. And they always seemed to find their way out. So it was really escape, a fantasy in the truest sense of the word.
They would always set the scene by the chiming of a clock. Do you remember that?
Yes. And they also had I think at one time they had a locomotive, but they went to a siren, I think, later on. The series was on so long that they did make slight changes in the theme. Some of them never changed in the whole duration of the show, particularly the soap operas. You know, the same intro was used for 25 years.
Yeah.
But in some of these nighttime shows, they did vary the themes. Gangbusters is another example where the theme changed remarkably over a 10-year span.
But it seems to me that they always used Vals Triste as the signature of the show, musical signature.
That's right, and that's how we got our music appreciation as youngsters to know what the classics were. That and the William Tell Overture, I guess. Everybody knew what they were.
They say it takes a really educated musician to play the William Tell Overture and not think of the Lone Ranger. At any rate, what series are you going to share with us from I Love a Mystery tonight?
Well, as I recall, this one was one of the older ones, and actually, it features the New York cast, and the reason I brought it in is because the man who plays Reggie is none other than our friend Tony Randall, who has gone on to great fame in television. And as far as I know, this was the only role he ever did on radio. So he played this one part, and he did it rather well. So I mainly brought it in just to hear how he sounded, Tony Randall, when he was back on radio some 20-odd years ago.
I Love a Mystery. O'clock in the velvety black of early morning, approaching the Madrones, magnificent old estate adjoining the Ricardo Torres homestead, someplace in Santa Monica Canyon. Leaving Terry Burke with Joe, the butler, to watch over Ricardo, his bride Louisa, the old Spanish housekeeper Satya, and Mary Kay, the AAA1's new secretary, Jack Packard and Doc Long set off down the Santa Monica Canyon Highway to the adjoining estate, the Madrones. Beatrice Collar and her father lived at the Madrones. A year and a half ago, Ricardo Torres was engaged to Beatrice. That was before he even knew Louisa. And then Ricardo broke off the engagement. And since that time, there has been trouble and the howl of wolves and two murder by the fangs of large gray animals in the neighborhood of the Torres homestead.
If you don't mind me saying so, Jack, 3 o'clock in the morning is a heck of a time to go calling on the neighbors.
Yeah, it's a good time to catch people off guard, too. Yeah, we must be almost to the gates of the Madrones.
Yeah, that's right, them big Madrones trees down there against the sky. Yeah, one of them stands on each side of the entrance.
Uh-huh.
You got a flashlight?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you use it a bit? Blacker than Satan's underwear.
Might attract attention. Well, we're doing all right. Keeping the grass alongside the pavement.
Yeah, he's doing all right, he says.
Yeah, hold it.
Huh?
Listen.
Somebody's running, coming this way.
A girl, keep still. Wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Mary Kay?
Who is it? Is that you, Doc?
What the blazes are you...
Oh, golly, am I glad I found you. I'm scared I missed you.
Well, what in the same name are you doing out here anyhow?
Is something the matter back at the tourist place? Didn't Terry Burke have better sense than to send a girl out alone?
Oh, nothing's wrong. Terry didn't send me. I just came.
You just came?
Oh, sure, sneaked out. I thought you'd need me more than Terry would, so I...
You're fired.
What?
Oh, now, look, Jack.
You're no good to a private detective running around like a chicken with its head chopped off. If we're going to have a secretary, it's going to be one who stays where she's told to stay.
But you do need me. You want a record of everything Beatrice and her father say. Besides, who ever heard of a boss firing his secretary at 3 o'clock in the morning? It doesn't look right.
I think she's got something there, Jack.
Oh, well, we'll talk about it later. Keep close to Doc and come on.
Oh, golly, Fred.
Keep off the pavement.
Here, take my hand.
Mm-hmm. And who knows, I might be of some use to you. A girl like me is good for something.
Bait for the wolves, and I don't mean werewolves.
Oh, I'm just trying to be where I'm wanted.
Yeah.
Secretary should make herself available is the way I look at it.
I think you got something here, Mary Kay.
Oh, sure, that's what a secretary's for. Respond to all the whims and fancies of her boss.
Lucky boss.
Here's the entrance to the Madronis.
Gravel road running up the house, if I...
Yeah.
Let's hold it, baby.
That I stumbled over right in the middle of the road.
What? What is it, Doc?
Well, I'm trying to find out. You wouldn't like to turn the flash. Uh-oh. Hey, Jack. It's the body of a woman.
What? Woman?
Doc, you sure?
As sure as you're alive. She's still warm. Blood on my hands. Jack, you gotta use your flashlight.
Yeah, okay. Let me have a look at her. I'll keep my body between the light and the house up there. Right? There.
Hey.
Okay. Don't look. Turn your back.
Oh,
he was killed the same way Ricardo's kitchen maid was killed.
The fangs of an animal. Listen. Mary Kay. Mary Kay, where are you?
I love that program. I just absolutely enjoyed it. It was on the air for 14 years intermittently. There were some breaks. It wasn't on.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it was half hour, sometimes it was 15 minutes.
I remember when the program was on at 7:15 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday,
mm-hmm.
and then it really gained prestige because they moved it to the Blue Network on Monday nights from 8:30 to 9. In just a moment, we're going to turn to the, in my opinion, the best of the horror shows, the all-time classic. But first, this message.
This time of year is full of financial hurdles, including bills, federal income tax, and keeping up with spiraling winter fuel costs. A well-deserved spring vacation would be great, but you just can't work it into your budget. Luckily, there's help right around the corner. The folks at Cromwell Savings Bank or Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank will be delighted to chat with you. Their loan officers can help you arrange for a personal loan just when you need one the most. You'll find a friendly loan officer at any one of their six offices. Cromwell Savings has two, one at the corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell or at the new Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has four offices to serve you, two in Middletown and branches in Montville and Colchester. Stop in soon. Members FDIC. Again, back to Dick Bertel.
All right, Ed Corcoran, let's turn to Lights Out, and I'm not going to turn the lights out while this show is played. This, in my opinion, was the best of them all. Would you agree?
Yes. The writing was superb, and it was done late at night when you can really appreciate these things, particularly when you're just ready to go to bed. And many parents wrote in complaining that their kids heard this and they got nightmares, they couldn't sleep, and they got an awful lot of flack. But they loved it because it means people were listening.
That's right.
But there was quite an outburst about this particular show because they came up with some real beauties as far as themes for the show were concerned.
Who was the creator?
Well, this was written primarily by Arch Obler, who has gone on to screenwriting and TV writing. He's very well known today. I don't recall his most recent work, but he is a big-time writer. And he was the creative genius behind Lights Out for many years. And later on, they did get other writers to contribute, but he was the founding father of the series, shall we say.
And very often, they would leave you up in the air, whereas the other stories would resolve themselves, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it was kind of a the lady and the tiger type of an ending, you know. It kind of... It didn't reach a conclusion. You had to kind of just work it out for yourself. And it was a little frustrating at times because you got used to the finality of these things. But that was one of the twists they used quite often was this ending, which was quite uncertain as to what was going to happen.
Yeah. The most popular, I suppose, we're not going to play that one, but the one that the show is best remembered for, I guess, is Chicken Heart.
Yeah, that was one of your favorites, as I recall. In fact, when we first got together, it was one of the show you talked about. Unfortunately, I had it, and I thought you were going to fall off the chair when I told you I had a copy of it. And it concerned, I guess, a chicken heart that was injected with some kind of a special fluid, and it kept growing and growing and growing, and it encompassed the whole country after so long a time. Everybody was destroyed. So it was the end of the world, according to how Arch Obler would have envisioned it in his mind.
Yeah, brought to an end by a chicken's heart. I remember that line. All right, but that's not the one we're going to play now. This one's called The Dark. Can you set the stage for us?
Yeah, this is tongue-in-cheek horror, Dick. You know, you have to have a sense of humor with this because it's really black humor in its blackest. And it concerns a couple of doctors, I guess, responding to a call in an ambulance. And the rest of it, you have to use your imagination.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, right with you, Doc. Right with you. Said somebody was hurt?
That's what the switchboard said.
Gee, what a dump. Huh. Don't seem to be a bell.
Oh, there must be. There's a light in there. Try the door.
Yeah, it's open.
Well, let's go.
All right.
Hello in there. Hello. This is another false alarm. Anybody here? I'm a doctor.
Hey, look. In the corner. This I gotta see.
Lady, I'm a doctor from General Hospital. Now, what's the matter?
She is screwy, all right, ain't she?
Frightened.
Come on, Doc. You want us to get her out of here? Or the straitjacket. Should I get the straitjacket? No, Doc, wait. Where are you going?
Can't get it open.
Huh? What's the matter? What do you want to go in there for?
Can't get this open.
Okay.
Whoever
okay.
is hurt must be in there. Blasted door. Come on, we'll break it down.
But the woman.
Forget the woman. Come on, put your shoulder to it. Come on.
Yeah, all right. It's dark.
Yeah.
Can't see a thing.
Go on back in the other room and get that kerosene lamp.
Well, I...
Get it, I say.
Yeah, I get it. Here, Doc. The lamp.
Okay. Hold it high.
Yeah?
What? Oh, Mother in Heaven.
What? On the floor. What is it?
It's a man.
Oh, no. It can't be.
Yes, I tell you, yes, it's a man. A man. And he's been turned inside out.
Inside out?
Yes, see for yourself. It's a man. But the skin is the inside. The raw flesh is the outside. Organs hanging.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. A man turned inside out. Like you turn a glove inside.
Yeah, it's alive. It's alive.
I see.
Alive?
Yes.
Doc, it's trying to get up.
Oh, no.
Trying to get up, I tell you. Trying to move.
Sam, hold that light high.
I can't watch. Look at it rolling over.
Trying
to get up.
Stop that.
Look, trying to get up on its knees. Doc, make it stop. Kill it. Do something.
Sam,
man
stop.
Can't live inside out like that, I tell you.
Stop. Hysterical old woman, it's what you honor. You stand there and shut up.
Listen to him. Listen to him. Oh, let's get out of here, Doc, please.
Don't be a fool. We've got to find out, Sam. What? What? Look, there's another door.
Yeah. Open.
The answer might be in there.
Doc, don't. We got
the lantern. Bring it.
Gee, Doc, why can't we just go?
Hold it high.
Doc, what?
Don't move. There's no floor in there.
I don't see nothing. Nothing but dark.
Well, look. The dark sort of spills over on the edges.
Huh?
Well, look, I tell you. It's a deeper dark than dark. Something moving in there.
Doc, close the door.
No. No, wait.
Then I'll close it.
Oh, you fool, open that door. I've got to see what... She's coming in here.
Come on, Doc. Let's get out of here.
No, Sam. I'm going to find out what this is all about. All my life, things have been what they've been. I'm going to know all about this.
Please, Doc, please, let's get out of here.
Woman, if you know anything, tell me. What was it we saw back of that door where the floor should have been? Do you know?
She's going to the door. She's going to open it.
Yes.
Oh, Doc, will you listen to me? Let's get out of here.
No, now wait. She's just standing there, looking into the dark.
Yeah. Doc? What's that coming up out of the hole in the floor?
The dark.
It's like black smoke. Listen to it. It's reaching up to her.
Yes.
What is it? Smoke? Black? What?
Crawling up around her. No.
Inside out. It turned her inside out.
I've got to get out of here. I've got to tell them all about you. I've got to tell everyone there's something like you loose in the world. Got to warn everybody. Get off me. Cold. Slimy. How can shadows be slimy? So cold. Covering me over. My head. My face. My face. My mouth. The cold. The cold.
Well, there you have it. The dark.
The people are going to shoot us for playing that.
No, I don't think so. I hope not. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I hope we didn't frighten too many people. But it goes to show you, and perhaps that's the proof that we were looking for, that you can use your imagination to its fullest to enjoy a storyline, and only radio is able to provide that. I hope one day that... on a regular basis, that imagination will be stimulated again.
Well, let's hope so, because you could never do it on television. That story.
Ed Corcoran, thank you very much for sharing your selection of horror stories with us here on the Golden Age of Radio. And until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you by WTIC, also by Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank and their Cromwell Savings Bank Division. Hometown friends serving your best banking interests in every way. The Golden Age of Radio was produced by Bob Sharego and Dick Bertel.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camay, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse so white and rinse so bright.